is the Sports Fever. If it's a sport, we cover it. And here are the hosts, Anthony Colasano, Dom DeRosa, Noah Gugliotta, also known as Googs, and Sean Johnson.
.com. Proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station of the Year. And live from the Rider University Studios, it's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me, as always, it's Dom DeRosa and Noah Gugliotta, or otherwise known as Googs. And obviously, Sean is once again not with us because he overslept.
Who? I'm kidding. Hi, Sean.
SST. It's the new.
You want to tell new listeners what SST means?
Sean Standard Time. You know what we should do? That like segment on iCarly when it's like, what's Gibby thinking about? We should do a where the hell is Sean Johnson? And you know, just like just every time he's laying down.
Yeah. With Sean Standard Time SST. What we got to do in order to figure it out, all we have to do is take 8 p.m. and make it 8 a.m. That's his sleep time. If it's 4 a.m., it's 4 p.m. for us. He's just the flip. He's the flip side of things.
So wait. So is he – he's in REM sleep right now. He's definitely REMing.
Probably.
He's got to be.
Getting the Z's going.
Yeah. Multiple Z's. But
good for him.
Yeah, but we're finally going to be able to talk about some baseball. The World Series wrapped up last week. The Dodgers won the World Series finally in six games. They have been in the World Series twice previously. They lost both those in 2017 and 2018 to the Astros in seven and then to the Red Sox, I believe, in six it was.
Yes.
But regardless, they both lost those games. And I think...
Maybe it was six.
Five or six. It was one of the two. But
it might have been five because the Red Sox made that huge comeback in L.A.
Yeah, it might have been five because the series ended in L.A.
Yeah.
There was that one crazy game, though, that went forever.
Yeah, and the Red Sox won that.
17 innings.
And the Red Sox won that game.
Sure. It was five or six. It was one of those.
Yeah, but like I said, the Dodgers finally were able to capture the crown. It's their first World Series win since 1988. It's a long time coming. And a lot of time coming for this team in itself. I mean, the guys that are on this team have been in those previous two World Series. And, you know, this was kind of, I think a lot of people knew that this was it. It was kind of like they had to win this one, or it looks like they were going to blow the whole thing up if they didn't win. You get to that many times and to not win it, and then to possibly not win it again, like it was going to come to that point. But lo and behold, they won the series. Corey Seager was named MVP. Dom, I'll start with you. You weren't rooting for the Dodgers going into the series because you are a Padres fan and they are your so-called rivals, as you like
They're
to call
just
them.
Division rivals, okay? You know,
but you make a bigger deal out of it.
I know, but they're finally competing in the playoffs, so it's expanded.
All right, whatever. But what are your thoughts on it? Obviously, you think they deserve to win it.
Oh, of course. Look, they haven't won. The LA Dodgers haven't won since '88, defeating the Athletics? So,
yeah.
It's been a while. They finally got the monkey off their back. And I don't know if I agree with you, first off, on blowing it up just because they signed Mookie Betts to that huge extension.
I think I would say they would reshuffle the team. Like, it wouldn't the core.
Yeah.
Like, Turner and, I don't know, Pollock and Bellinger. Yeah, like, yep. You know. Yeah.
No, I get you, but it's well-deserved. I mean, for Tampa, I want to rant on them a little bit, not getting into Kevin Cash just yet. That's going to be all of us together. But, I mean, the hottest player in baseball in the World Series is Corey Seager, and you throw a hanging changeup, which was crushed. And I can't believe it. I mean, just the way that Tampa flashed the leather in the other postseason games and then the World Series, I mean, Manny Margot and Kiermaier are getting tied up in the outfield. Manuel Margot is stealing home off of Clayton Kershaw with a 20-second windup. He was out. I mean, he says put the headsets on. And no, Margot, what are you doing?
Yeah, that wasn't a smart move because even then, I know Kershaw's delivery isn't the quickest, but he stepped off pretty fast when he was coming home.
Not get a balk, and Max Muncy's pointing saying, get him. He knows what to do. It's Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, Yeah, and he's facing, if he's a lefty.
He's facing first.
Yeah, so, yeah, that makes sense. I was trying to think.
Yeah.
No, but, no, yeah, that was a boneheaded move. Obviously, the Kevin Cash move was boneheaded. We'll get into that and, you know, dissect that more. But, Noah, you know, I'll get your takes on this whole World Series and the Dodgers and Rays in general.
I was very happy to see the Dodgers win. I was very happy to see the Rays lose. Because one thing I don't think people really understood about this Rays team, maybe they saw it in the World Series, but I saw it all season, they were very arrogant. Just, Anthony, you agree, right? Like, watching them, they were just very, they really knew that they were good, and that's fine, but I just felt like they were gassing themselves. I'm using a millennial term, or younger than that.
Gen Z. Yeah. Like, they were being too overconfident in their abilities.
And I just think that it just was off-putting. And I saw, and you know, people are going to say salty Yankees fans. That's fine. It's probably a little true, but that's, I'm more about mad about the Yankees, not them. They're a good team. I mean, that starting rotation, that starting three on paper is awesome, but I think Tyler Glasnow was,
he was not good in the World Series. Uh-huh. He had a lot of strikeouts, but he was giving up the runs.
Every pitch was in the dirt.
Yeah, he was not good, and I think that is a huge problem, because during the regular season, I think his ERA was kind of high.
It was in the fours. He got lit up against us.
Yes, but I'll say this, in the regular season, Glasnow, there were times he looked really, really strong, especially against the Yankees, and I thought, but I think that's because the Yankees lineup is one that is so inconsistent. They're a lot of relying on the home run and this and that, and a lineup that from up bottom to or from top to bottom in the Dodgers that was really deep and had a lot of different pieces they could plug in and were working. I mean, like, think about this. Jock Peterson, come playoff time, he's on. Like, he may not have always the best regular season and may struggle here and there, but when it comes to playoff time, like, he just hit the ball. Like, he got a couple base hits here and there that were big to start innings, and that's it. So good for the Dodgers. I was happy for Dave Roberts, especially after seeing that game four loss. That was one of the most, that was the craziest ending to a game I've ever seen. I mean, Brett Phillips comes up out of nowhere.
I mean, that was insane. Right? I was watching it in my bathroom, so I didn't get bashed for everyone else rooting for the Dodgers. And yeah. All I see live is Chris Taylor botch that play. I'm like, all right, that's going to happen. Maybe your glove was a couple inches higher from the grass. But then when that got in, at first, I thought that was in Will Smith's, I think it was Will Smith catching. I thought it was in the catcher's glove, and he whipped too hard to the left where it popped right out. But I actually saw a replay. He totally missed the ball and then just thought he had it and whipped. So yeah, he wasn't looking. Yeah.
He was moving on to the tag before he even had the ball. And that is like grade one. Like, everyone says, you know, make sure you have it before you even look to the second part of the play. And, you know, it screwed it up. But I mean, it was a great game, back and forth, run scoring. When the Rays went up in that game, I knew, I was like, the Dodgers are going to be able to score runs. And they got the lead, but it just wasn't enough. But after that, I thought Kershaw proved himself. I don't think he was phenomenal, but he got outs and got his team. He got to the bullpen in enough time to where they could get the job done. I thought Kenley Jansen, there's a little scariness to him. I don't know what's going on with him. I think they said in the game before he blew that save that, you know, that was the best he'd looked all season or in the past 2 years, they said. But I mean, they got to figure some things out still, because I think this Dodgers team, they have holes. Know, and everything, they can figure it out, but they might have a lot of issues coming up.
Yeah. And no, I'm glad you actually brought up that Kenley point. I said it all year, credit to the Dodgers for winning, but their pen was their worst enemy out of everything.
At times.
I mean, Julio Urias came up big when he became a pen guy or a starter. He's promising. But when it comes to their pen, Pedro Baez, they signed Blake Treinen. Kenley Jansen really hasn't been the same for a couple years now. That was the big if. But you got to give credit to when credit's due. Their starting pitching really handled itself. Bueller was phenomenal. Kershaw obviously had his struggles beforehand, but really showed off against that Rays. And it just felt like the Rays forgot to bring their bats with them. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't hitting. I mean, they were hitting home runs, but they weren't doing like the fundamental stuff. They were becoming the Yankees.
Yeah,
basically.
Can I ask you guys a question though?
Yeah.
Because I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, you know, at the Rays bullpen was top of the top, best of the best. They were missing that guy Rowe. What's his first
name? Brandon Lowe.
Yeah. So. He was one of their best relievers, had a really like good slider and stuff, but they still had such a good...
Oh, Brandon Morrow?
Morrow, yeah. Morrow? I thought you were talking about a hitter, I'm sorry.
No, it's R-O-E.
Okay, I think he's a rookie or something. He's young.
But he was really good. But anyways, they still had Castillo.
Fairbanks, Nick Anderson.
I mean, like, a ton of
Yarbrough,
pieces.
Like, they had everybody.
Anderson was struggling. A bunch of them were struggling. My question to you guys is, do you think that strategy of Kevin Cash, if it's a big situation, he's going to put in the bullpen? Do you think – I know it's a 60-game season. I know. Do you think that could have affected it at all? Maybe they were overworked in a sense?
Well, yeah, I said that in the beginning. I said, look, it works in a 60-game season. If we played the whole season and we're going to play the whole season next year for sure, or if not definitely over 100 games, it's not going to work again. Yeah, he's going to have to, you know, they really got to rely more on their starting pitching. He can't be cute with the rotation. And, you know, obviously, I think the bullpen was gassed at that point because he used them so much.
Look, over the years, the Yankees have used their pen a little too much in the regular season. By the time it comes to the playoffs in 162, they're gassed. In 60 games, they're gassed. I agree with Anthony and you on that, if you are on the same point. You got to be able to use your starters for a good amount of innings.
Well, yeah, and I just have been thinking out of it, and Anthony did say it, like, and it is true. If you think about it, if we're saying 60 games, but by the time they played a lot of playoff games. They played two in the first against the Jays. They played all five against the Yankees, seven against the Astros, and then six against the Dodgers. I mean, count that up. That's 13, 15, like, they played 22 postseason games. That's about... 80 games in the regular season. About that time, it's almost halfway, or pretty much halfway. I mean, that is when you start to, I think, feel the effects of pitching so much. And Blake Snell, he didn't get past like the fifth or sixth inning all season. So, you know, again, I just think it is a fair point. And Anthony did say it, and I agree with both of you. I think it's definitely worth bringing up. And I they were invincible and obviously showed that they can give up runs.
Yeah, and you know, going to the next segment, we'll definitely talk about kind of Blake Snell and him getting pulled early, you know, that Kevin Cash move that kind of had an uproar on Twitter and the baseball community of how that kind of really ruined the game and the overall series for the team. And we'll also get into more about Justin Turner, as he did test positive for COVID-19 during the game, was then taken out, but then was on the field celebrating with his team while tested positive. So we'll get into all that controversy and more on the Sports Fever after these underwriting announcements on 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com.
And we're back with this edition of the Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
TheBronc.com, live from the Rider University Studios. It's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me, as always, it's Don DeRosa and Noah Gugliotta, or otherwise known as Googs. So in the last segment, we talked about obviously the Dodgers winning the World Series, and kind of, you know, what it meant for the organization. And now we're going to get into some, you know, controversies that happened during the series and specifically in Game 6 itself. Two things that happened. We'll start off with the one that happened later in the game, and that was Justin Turner getting removed in the seventh inning of Game 6. Everyone was kind of questioning what's going on. It was later released or reported that he had COVID-19. However, when they won the game and they won the series, you see him out on the field with his teammates celebrating while testing positive. It caused for some controversy because obviously, you know, everyone knows that this virus is, you know, it's lethal. You know, I wouldn't say it's super, super lethal, but it's more lethal than the flu, you know, 2% higher. And it's very contagious. And he was on the field with this team. Now, I know, you know, we talked during the break, you know, we'll get your take about how, you know, you get so close to the top only to be getting the virus and not be able to celebrate. However, my point of view is that you're putting, you know, obviously you and obviously his wife who was there can be selfish and celebrate with each other. But if you're with other people, you know, it could cause a lot of issues and just, you know, transmitting to them, which then transmits to other people. It just goes on and on and on. It's like a chain. So I was kind of upset that Major League Baseball didn't handle this very well. I gave them props in the in the past for figuring it out, because obviously they did have their issues, but they were able to squander it. But now this comes up, you know, it's another blemish on the season for them in my eyes. I'm disappointed. And Dom did mention during the break as well, and we'll talk about it too for a little bit, how the Dodgers possibly knew about Turner's positive test way before inning seven. There are rumors that he tested positive days before and he was still playing. And if that's the case, then the Dodgers are in real trouble, you know, with the league and could face some serious consequences. But no, I'll start with you. Obviously, you don't think that it's a big deal because of, you know, the magnitude of the situation of winning the World Series and, you know, getting so far and only to not celebrate because of the virus.
Yeah, I listen, he's wrong. He shouldn't have gone back out there when he was told not to. And I think it's a pretty big deal. I do. I couldn't imagine, like you were, you know, saying, I couldn't imagine winning the World Series, like being so close after so many years with this one team and then being told that you can't go celebrate with your own teammates. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Yeah. So it just sucked for him. And the worst part of it is not only did he win, not get to celebrate, but now he's getting crapped on because he went back on the field. But I will say he's wrong. Like, he shouldn't have gone back on the field, especially when he's told not to. I'm just saying I can understand that he really wanted to celebrate. So, yeah, that's basically what I'm saying here.
Okay. So yeah, on my radio show, I did defend Turner, but I understand both points. You can go both ways here. He's one of the longest tenured Dodgers on the roster still, if not the longest.
I think it's him. It's him and Bellinger for kind of this run, but I think it's him just overall. It's him and Kershaw.
Yeah, yeah, him and Kersh. And, you know, like Noah said, the previous years of just the struggle and the choking and everything like that, and you finally win it. I understand. It's protocols. This is all unexpected. This all just hit us like a train, you know? Just it's unbelievable. But at the same time, I feel like maybe the players also had to be comfortable with him stepping on that field and being close to him with pictures taken. But there was one thing that I can't defend Turner on, was that, look, I don't care if you're for or not for masks and how they work, but he did not, in a video with him on the field afterwards, he did not really have his mask pulled up above his nose too much. It was more just down towards his neck. So that was one thing he can be pulled on. But otherwise than that, I would, if I'm in Justin Turner's cleats, I would understand that, hey, we won a World Series finally. I want to be out there despite this right now. I want to be out there for my team. And he was a big contributor too. He had a hot bat.
No, yeah, he did have big hits, big plays. I will say, if Turner did kind of comply and maybe say to, you know, the health officials at the game and be like, hey, you know, what if I wear my mask? You know, if I wear some, you know, some extra gear so that I can, you know, celebrate with them. But however, not, you know, something could have been worked out where he could have had some extra gear, put some mask or whatever on and gone out with the team. Because, you know, as we know for now, it's transmittable by the air and, you know, from our mouths. So had he worn his mask and stuff like that, I feel like, you know, it would have been fine. But, you know, I mean, look, he got a lot of...
I think they might have still given him a hard time, though. Yeah. I think that he might have been, like, trying to plead with them, and they were just like, no. And then he's just like, I'll go by myself. He was definitely wrong. I just think, like I said, I can understand his...
No, I mean, it's a tough situation, you know, and, you know, we'll see obviously, with this week coming up, we'll see more information. It probably will be reported about it, whether or not it what it did happen. Like there's a couple of things. It could be a false positive, which I don't think is the case now, or else that would have been already reported.
I thought so at first, though. Yep. I did.
That's what people were saying at first. It was a false positive, but then I think it got confirmed that it was not. So there's. Yeah. So there's that. There could have been the thing, like Dom said during the break, that they didn't know about it in advance and didn't do anything about it, which is another bigger issue, you know, and that's on the fault of the Dodgers and Justin Turner in itself.
I heard that same thing from Dom, but I also want to say, like, if Corey Seager's not in the fold, like, I think he's the MVP of the World Series. Like, he was great.
Yeah, defense. Turner just had it, man.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think it's him or Walker Buehler.
Yeah. But Seager was just phenomenal.
But did he only? I think Buehler though. How many starts did he have? Did he have?
He only had one. But he would have pitched game seven. I don't know. I mean,
well, it would have all been up in the air. But I mean, he was at least top three and most important to his team in the series, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, obviously, you know, this story is going to keep developing. If there's any more news in this next upcoming week, you know, we'll report on it and we'll talk about it on the show for next week. And then we'll talk about the other controversial thing that happened in this game. And that was Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell in the sixth inning of a game six game, do or die for his team. Blake Snell is a guy, if you don't watch baseball a lot and you only really watch the playoffs, is that the Rays are a team that they don't let their starters go 7-8 innings. You know, there's a limit. They only go 6 innings, or if they reach a certain pitch count, Kevin Cash yanks them out. However, he got a lot of flack for this because it's a World Series game, do or die. He was dealing. The Dodgers hitters couldn't do anything about it. And he had only 72 pitches in the 6 innings. So that's a good pitch count to be at in that lane of the game, and to pull him out in a game where you know that this is his last game of the season, no matter what happens, because he cannot pitch in game seven if it was to come to that. There was no issue. You might as well just let him ride it out and also see also how he does in those last three innings, because let's face it, he's young. However, you do want to develop him into a longer starter, because he is a starter and starters are supposed to go deep into games. You know, they're not, starters aren't long relievers, they're not openers, they're starters. They got to go 7-8, and you know, if they're really feeling it and their pitch count's good, go the whole game. You know, I remember, like, you know, A-Rod and, you know, Pedro talking how, like, you know, they wish they played in this era, or else they wouldn't have to face, you know Curt Schilling in inning number 8 in the playoffs, or Pedro Martinez wouldn't go 9 shutout innings. Like, it's just not that anymore. But I think Kevin Cash was in the total wrong. Did he deserve the flack? Yes and no. And, you know, Noah will explain why he thinks it's kind of a yes and no situation.
You want me to go? I'll go quick. It was wrong. 73 pitches. Like, I agree. I'm just saying, I saw this Rays team and their bullpen is great. It did struggle at times, and especially the person he brought in, Nick Anderson, he was not great, especially during the postseason. So I think if anything, it's who he brought in. I don't know why he didn't bring in Diego Castillo there, but he probably shouldn't have done it. My only point is that they've been doing this all season, and it really has worked. And everyone says, Kevin Cash is the greatest manager. He's this and that. And then suddenly he makes one huge error in a World Series, and now he's the worst thing. He's crapped on. Like, this is it. Like, I'm just saying, I think people should be a little more consistent and understand the way the Rays play and the way they strategize. It usually works. Didn't hear at all. I think it was a poor decision, especially because I think in that situation, Blake Snell obviously wants the ball, and I think you take a risk. Take a risk. Like, it's a close game. Give him a shot and see what he can do. But my only point is that just people just want to jump on the bandwagon of, well, now this guy sucks. Okay, Kevin Cash, he made a huge mistake. It's all his fault. I think it's a little more to that. And I'm kind of annoyed. Like, Kevin Kiermaier, he said something like, it's Blake Snell's ball. Like, yeah, I agree. But don't you, like, can't you defend your manager and say you've been with the team the entire season? You've watched these exact same decisions, not in as big as circumstances, work. So that's all I'm saying. Just be consistent. None of these people watch baseball, apparently, or watch the Rays because they don't know that that's what they do.
Yeah, I mean, A-Rod said something, but he's just a biased Yankees fan, so I understand. I understand his point.
But I disagree with him. He said, I would much rather be in this situation. Dude, they've been in that situation all season, and it's worked. They're 40-20 in the regular season.
A-Rod, the Yankees could not be in the playoffs, and he'd still choose them to win the World Series. Yeah. Give me a break.
A-Rod's a little off on that one because, again, they've done it all season, and it has worked. It just didn't work in a big situation, and that's why you're complaining. And I agree he's wrong, but, like, be – at least be a little consistent. That's all.
Yeah, that's, look, I get it. I have watched the Rays just because of Renfro and Margot going over there, but this is what they've done. This is what they specialized in. They use that opener, not really a starter in a sense, more of a bullpen dad. That's what they started. They do this thing where they go with the pen and trust it, and I understand that. But – being this late into the series against the Dodgers, they should have known by now their pen was struggling, especially when it came to, like, the top of the order with Betts and all that. So this was a huge mistake. I mean, if you're Blake Snell, you only allow 2 hits and 9 strikeouts and 73 pitches. It's insane. And Corey Seager's coming up. Yeah, he's the hottest hitter in baseball, but you're going on a lefty-lefty. I don't care how good you are. Lefty-lefty isn't as easy, just like righty-righty, unless you're Mike Trout. It was just a huge mistake, and that's what cost them. But, hey, you learn from your mistakes, and that's the beauty about sports too. So I think Cash was totally in the wrong. I think Blake Snell was pissed, and I totally understand why. I think Blake Snell should have stayed in that game.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and I'll just wrap up with this. You know, I mean, I know Kevin Gass got a lot of flack, but, you know, you have millions of – I know it's not a lot of fans watching as we're used to for World Series or just any big sporting event in general because ratings have gone down drastically during the pandemic. But, you know, a lot of eyes are going to be on you, and, you know, you got to take as much criticism as you can. And a lot of stars were coming after him, both people in the baseball community, like baseball stars and outsiders. Like Patrick Mahomes was watching this game and he was pissed off. He's like, what the heck are you doing?
What the heck are you doing? You got to keep him in there.
Yeah, but then again, Patrick Mahomes does not watch every Tampa Bay Rays game.
Exactly. That's my point, is that these people who come out of the woodworks have not watched baseball. They don't know what the guy does. Like, and I hate him. I can't stand him. Kevin Cash is a cocky piece of poo. I'm just saying that it's such a Monday morning quarterback to be like, why didn't he keep him in? He's done it all season and it's worked. It didn't work in this huge situation. He's wrong. Should have kept him in. I'm just saying I can at least see where he was going with it. That's all I'm saying. Like, it just pissed, like, Patrick, go focus on the game. You got to play the Jets this week. Aren't you worried?
Not that he's worried about playing your New York Jets, Noah. Not one bit.
He's focusing on other sports, and he's still going to kick off.
The spread on that game was so big. Like, I'm just like, all right. I mean, I didn't bet on the game, but you guys are going to get smoked.
Multiply the spread by 7, and you got the score. The Jets are going to score any points.
Noah, just make your own podcast.
I know, but, like, I'm in the Jets rant with Noah Googs.
Like, Noah Googs.
Patrick Mahomes is coming out and people are like, oh yeah, makes sense to me. Like, what?
Oh my God. We love when Noah rants, but we gotta take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into more baseball news. We'll talk about the free agency and stuff. And obviously, we'll talk about this. Tony La Russa, hired to be the Chicago White Sox manager. Wow. Another controversial story and hire in baseball. So we'll get into that and more after these underwriting announcements on 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com.
And we're back with this edition of the Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
.com live from the Rider University Studios. It's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Andy Colasano, and alongside me, as always, it's Don DeRosa and Noah Gugliotta, or otherwise known as Googs. So in the last segment, we talked more about the World Series and kind of, you know, the big controversies that happened during it. We're gonna stick to baseball, but go in a different direction to talk about managerial hirings that just happened this week, and they were kind of, you know, they were shocking to say the least. We'll start with kind of the one that kind of came out of left field, and that was Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa to the Chicago White Sox. You know, obviously Tony La Russa is a baseball legend. He coached the A's back in the 80s when they went on their little dynasty run. He then would go on to coach the Cardinals, where he then win another two championships in 06 and win that big one in 2011 when David Freese became a superstar in front of everybody's eyes in the Fall Classic. And then after that, he retired, went to the Hall of Fame, was in the class, I think, with I think it was with Joe Torre and Bobby Cox. I think he was with them. So that was a great class he was in. You know, you would think, okay, you know, he could ride off in the sunset. I think he had a big part, or he had a big role in Major League Baseball's executive office, because I know Joe Torre does, so I think La Russa did as well. And this came out of nowhere. I have my doubts on this. I don't know how well he'll do with a younger core, because he is an old school manager, and this is a really young, vibrant, exciting group. So this could cause some controversy and some issues, but you know, we're gonna make this segment kind of quick. But I'll start with you, Dom. You know, what do you think about this really outlandish hiring that the White Sox have made?
Hey, look, man, it's not just baseball; it's all sports. We're trying to go younger on the manager side, and that's what players like a lot. And you just hit it on the head. La Russa, as great as a history as he had, he is old. He's 76 now. Making a little joke here. I mean, really, he's pretty old. I mean, he might have to go out to the mound to go talk to the pitcher with the cane. You know, he's getting up there in age. And with such a young core, it is a little scary. I mean, Andy Green wasn't old for the Padres, but he was a little up there in his 40s, I'd say. Jace Tingler's younger, and they went young. A lot of guys are trying to go young. It's like shocking if you even get a position now, if you still have your position as an older gentleman, especially in baseball. I'm not a big fan of this. I just think his time has come. He's had his day. He's had great history and great moments. But with this White Sox team, I don't see it. If he went to a veteran team, maybe, like, let's say the Dodgers let go of Dave Roberts. All right, I get it. They're contenders. If he went to that kind of team, yeah. But to a young team that's trying to learn from this year, I don't see it. I think they made a huge mistake.
Noah?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they didn't. Like, I know Rick Renteria, they got rid of him, but like I wish they would have kept him, because I think they're close. I think they were starting to figure some things out. They did struggle towards the end of the season this past year, but I think they're going to be a team that's going to be hard to deal with, you know, in the coming seasons when everyone just has to play, you know, out of their division. So and then La Russa, I think it'll be interesting to see, because I already heard some things within the organization. People are not so happy, like Anthony and Dom, both of you pointed out the age thing. It might be a little bit, how are they going to connect? But I'm excited to see, because the last time he managed, I mean, he was in a World Series 2011, and it's 10 years later, you know, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, to say the least. You know, a lot of eyes are going to be on them, not only because of him, but also of how well the team did this past season, where they're trajected to go going forward. And hopefully he doesn't stop that trajectory and keeps it upward, not downward. And then, you know, quickly, A.J. Hinch. He is now the new manager of the Detroit Tigers. Now, obviously, A.J. Hinch, you know, former manager of the trash-banging 2017 Houston Astros, who I despise with all my heart.
I can tell.
You know, obviously, he's not with that team anymore. He did go to the Tigers. You know, his suspension was up. The moment his suspension was up, however, a lot of teams were calling him, trying to get him to manage, because say what you want about him. You know, I have my opinions, very strong opinions about him. But people say he's a good manager. Fine, whatever. I don't care. But yeah, I don't know what to make of this hiring. I don't like it. I wish he still wasn't in the league. Like Jeff Luhnow isn't still in the league. But you know, he's going to a very, very bad team, and therefore that kind of makes me happy, because therefore he's not going to succeed very well. So, you know, we'll wrap up with that. But Dom, you know, what are your thoughts on the cheater going to Detroit?
Yeah, I guess they want a guy that had, in quotes, experience. So, yeah. I don't know. Like, look, the Tigers suck. They have good prospects, but Cabrera's like 47 now.
He's still on the contract for a long time.
That's the one thing. That's like Yadi Pujols, these big contracts to these guys hurt you in the end. I mean, it's still like a bunch for just 1 year, a bunch of money. I don't know. Detroit, I think they should focus more on calling up prospects when it's time, like Casey Mize was, but he struggled this year. But I don't know. AJ Hinch, I don't think it's going to be a huge difference maker for the Tigers organization. No matter who's the manager, they got to build young. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. No, what are your thoughts on the Cheetah going to the Motor City?
You are using that word.
He's a cheater. It's just how it is. You know, the evidence shows it, you know.
It's true. And you know, like, you could say that, hey, he didn't have anything, you know, not as much to do with it.
Oh, please.
But, I mean, there's no excuse. He better have his control over his team. And here's the thing. I don't know how the players can really respect him. You know, I don't understand how that's going to work. But if they can get behind him, you know, good on him, because this Tigers team needs some work. But if they can figure it out and he can do the job, then, you know, good for them. But he's just – listen, I thought he was going to come back into coaching in some way, but I did not expect it to be this soon and this big a job. I mean, not everyone can just get a job with a major league team as a head manager. Like, it's not that easy. So I'm kind of shocked that it was this soon, but – we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked too. Do you have something to add quickly, Dom?
Oh, no. I was just, you know, agreeing with Noah's point. Oh,
okay. No, yeah, I mean, it is shocking. He is very fortunate. You know, hopefully he doesn't ruin this opportunity, because I think this is kind of his redemption, you know, to, you know.
Oh, yeah. Go 47-115. That's redemption, baby.
Yeah. But yeah, this is his redemption. We'll see how he does with a very struggling team that's really not going to be good for a pretty long time. And they do have some work to do, as Noah says.
5 years.
You say 5 years.
I say the next 5 years, 3-4 to 5.
All right. So we'll go with that. The next 5 years, we'll see if he's still around.
We'll see if I'm correct. We'll go back on this right now. 5 years from now in 2025,
and the Tigers October are 31st.
Yep.
2025.
Easy date to remember.
Halloween.
Boys. Whoa.
Yeah.
That scared me.
No, God. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some NBA news that happened. More news with my Brooklyn Nets as they hire a established coach to join their coaching staff, and as well as the Sixers hiring an established coach as well to their coaching staff as well. We'll get into all that and more in the last segment of the Sports Fever on 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
And we're back with this edition of the Sports Fever. Let's send it back to our hosts now.
.com. Live from the Rider University Studios, it's the Sports Fever. I'm your host, Anthony Colasano. And alongside me, as always, it's Dom DeRosa and No Glugiata,
or otherwise known as Googs.
So in the final segment, we're going to wrap up with some basketball news, both having to do with coaching hirings in the Northeast, specifically the Atlantic Division. Before you get into that, Noah has a question about Halloween, which just passed on this past Saturday.
Okay, three quick questions.
Okay.
Go for it.
First, favorite Halloween candy. For me, it's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Go. What is yours?
Kit Kat.
Kit Kat.
Really the same?
You know, but I do hate, I remember I was like 10, I got a vanilla Kit Kat and I saved it. I ate everything else because I never had vanilla chocolate. And I saved that one and I tasted it like 3 weeks later. I was so mad at myself.
It's not even good.
It's nasty. All right, what's the other one?
These go together. Did you guys trade with anybody on Halloween?
Like, my sister.
I did that with my friends.
Okay, you guys did it. What was your best trading candy? Like the one, not even that it was the best, it was worth the most, but you wanted to get rid of it the most.
Candy corn?
I was more just like, it's like Skittles. Yeah. Skittles or Starburst, because I like Starburst, but it sticks so much to my teeth.
Yeah, but what's the one, what's the Rocky kind of ones that are like
Pop
like
Rocks?
No, they're like tablets. It starts with an S, I think. It's not Skittles.
Smarties?
Yeah, I hate those. I traded those to my sister all the time.
Those are terrible, but mine was, I hated Whoppers.
Really?
What? That's my favorite.
Whoppers are pretty good.
No, like Whoppers. That's my favorite.
I would trade those in a heartbeat.
Wow. I mean, yeah, they're a little hollow on the inside, but I like that.
Yeah, I could deal with them.
I love it. Once I start, that whole box is gone, Noah.
Goes to town.
Yeah. It's like hot Cheetos for me, man.
Oh, God.
I don't like Whoppers. All right, so now I know what to trade if I need to.
You know, can I say a funny Halloween story? Just very quickly. All right, so when I was a kid, my sister and I would go trick-or-treating all the time. I thought it would be a good idea. I was around 11. This was like the last time I went trick-or-treating. I was Jack Sparrow. You know, I couldn't grow a mustache at the time, so I got a marker-drawn mustache on me. And an old woman opened the door, and she gave us the candy, and she said to my sister and I, "Here you go, girls." So that was the last and final time Dom DeRosa went trick-or-treating. I had my dreadlocks, you know, I had everything, man. And then I get called a girl.
You got to get us a picture of that.
Oh, yeah, I wish. Please. I doubt I have one. I doubt it.
Your mom has to have one.
I doubt.
The Instagram post, you should do like a bunch of pictures of us in Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I have one with me and Batman.
If you send me one, I'll do it.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
All right, fine. So to wrap up this show, we're going to talk about the two recent hirings that happened in the NBA. One being with my Brooklyn Nets, Mike D'Antoni joins the coaching staff, and he becomes an assistant coach to Steve Nash. For people that are not aware, Mike D'Antoni, again, former head coach of the current Houston Rockets, and he also coached the Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash as a player, and also Amari Stoudemire, who is also on the coaching staff as well. I thought this was I like this move. The three of them know each other. They know how to work well together. And Noah, you pointed this out that, you know, when we talked about Amari first coming on and joining the staff, that, you know, it is good, it's flashy, but they needed an established person in the staff. And, you know, this was the guy.
Yeah. And that's what my only issue was with it. I like that they're going new. I like that they're trying to build and get these guys experience. But I really, like I said, I wanted somebody that had experience, was an older, like, wise guy who could kind of just teach and make sure that they understood, you know, what it was like to really coach. And I think I love the move. I love it. I think Dom, Dom will probably say this, but, he just coached the Rockets. It's kind of soon. And to have him in an assistant coaching job, I really like it. I think it'll really help the Nets out, and they know each other. Like you said, Anthony, they have a bond, and that relationship, I think, will propel them and help their coaching staff, you know, teach these players, even though they're a pretty well-rounded team and they can already step into that role and get the job done. So I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, no, I thought you were going to lead me to that. Anthony, congratulations on that. I think Mike D'Antoni was a fantastic assistant coach option. You really can't get any better than that. And I think this is good for both parties. For the Nets, you get an experienced guy. They obviously have relationships with Stoudemire and Nash over the time being. And for D'Antoni, in his case, he got out of the Rockets pretty quickly, a mutual agreement. But I think he needs this. I think he needs a head coaching break after all the issues and choking with the Rockets or just not living up to expectations. So I really think that this is just good. He can be a really good mentor, a really good leader for the years he's done. I like this move a lot. I think this is the best assistant coach hiring.
Yeah, and I really think in terms of like the offense, it's really going to, I think, enhance us more, because I feel like with the Rockets, I think D'Antoni really only had James Harden to rely on, and now he could work with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, like Joe Harris if he comes back. So I mean, if Sean Marks and Joe decide do what they need to do in the offseason and sign the guys, like D'Antoni has a lot more pieces to work with than I think he's had ever before.
Yeah,
you
I
know,
agree.
Because he was with the Lakers when they were kind of that super team, but they were old at that point. Mm-hmm. So Kobe wasn't the same. Nash wasn't the same. Pau Gasol was kind of, he was the only one really producing, and obviously Dwight Howard was injury prone at that point in his career. So I think it's great. I think that this is it. Now it's just a matter of just staff it. The coaching staff is established. Get the players, get that all situated, and then time to rock and roll for 2021. So I'm ecstatic as a Net fan. I couldn't be more excited for the 2021 season, because I think this is our year to take the crown. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I think this is Brooklyn's year to do it. I have nothing but finals expectations for this organization.
Yep. No, anything
less than that is a failure in my eyes.
I agree.
I used to think, okay, just make the playoffs, you know, that would be good, but it's finals or bust.
Now is the time.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's my take. And then real quickly, before we end the show, Sam Cassell to the Philadelphia 76ers. He follows his head coach, formerly from the Clippers to now the Sixers, Doc Rivers, to Philadelphia. This was a guy that was on a lot of people's radars. I know, Dom, you wanted him to take over Doc Rivers' role.
Yep.
I know Ryan Reynolds, he wanted him to be the Sixers head coach. However, he goes to Philadelphia. Actually, funny thing, we were talking about the D'Antoni hire on our group channel. Like, oh, yeah, congrats to the Sixers to getting Sam Cassell. Ryan's like, when did that happen? I'm like, yesterday. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah. And I showed him a picture. He's like, and he started freaking out because he didn't think the move, it kind of went under the radar. I don't think Woj posted about it, but, you know, real quick, I'll get your guys' points. You know, Dom, I'll start with you. You know, Sam Cassell, you wanted him there. He was a part of your team.
A little disappointed as an assistant coach. I think he's well-deserved of a head coach position. I'm not a fan for the Sixers for Doc Rivers just because of everything that happened. He's past his day. He's only remembered for 09. But
08.
08, sorry. Thank you. Lakers were 09. Come on, Dom. Get it together. But, Sam Cassell, great move. I think that was one of the best assistant coach hirings, too, this year. Really wish he was with the Clippers, but we got to see with Ty Lue and Chauncey Billups. Respectable move, though, for the Sixers. They got to turn it around. They got a lot of pressure.
Noah, for you real quick, Sam Cassell, Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, he started coaching, I think it was with the Wizards as an assistant in, like, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
This guy has been doing it. So I would like to see him get an opportunity to prove that what he can do as the main guy, as the head coach. Listen, he's going to work with Doc Rivers. I think I get why you guys are harsh on Doc Rivers, but, like, I think he's going to prove himself. I think he's going to, and I think the 76ers are his hardest project yet. I think
it's going to be tough. It's just that team's very complex already. You said it well, Noah. And just the way Elton Brand built it, I think incorrectly, it's going to put the most pressure on Doc Rivers now.
It's going to give him issues, but if he can figure out a way to put them in the position to win, I mean, you know, you got to give him credit. So we'll see what happens. But I would like to see Sam Cassell get a chance because, again, he's been coaching, being an assistant in the league for, what, 11 years almost? Like, it's an impressive feat.
And then real quick, you know, because you brought up Elton Brand, who built the team. Real quick, just quick takes. Daryl Morey is now the president of basketball operations for the Philadelphia 76ers, formerly of the Houston Rockets. Real quick, what do you think of that?
The team, I don't know. The Rockets just had issues with trades and all that, and just the way they build their team. It hasn't worked. I can see the struggle still continuing for Philadelphia.
Noah?
I just like that he's getting an opportunity with another job because, you know, we got crapped on last year, that whole situation ridiculously, and he just tweeted in support of, I don't even understand why.
Sunday with China.
Yes.
It didn't ruin their business. It was pretty selfish if you ask me, but I won't talk about that, but he deserves another opportunity.
Yep.
I would like to see what he's able to do with this team that is having struggles for, you know, compared to a team that, I mean, they did make Western Conference Finals. Like, they were in it. They should have, they had a chance to beat the Warriors. Like, you know, so I just think their playoff time, that team just didn't work, and hopefully he can do something better with the 76ers.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he does some good with the Sixers team. I feel like, you know, I feel like the shakeup was needed. I feel like it was more of executives, not much the players. But, you know, we'll see. You know, Stephen A. did say this hot take that he wants James Harden to be traded to the Sixers, and that means trading Ben Simmons. But we can talk about that next week because we're wrapping up this edition of the Sports Fever. We thank you guys for tuning in. If you want to follow us and have more info, you can follow us on our social media pages, the_Sports_Fever on both Instagram and Twitter. And you could write us an email at thesportsfever@gmail.com. But this has been the Sports Fever, only on 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Sports Fever. Be sure to subscribe to our channel and be on the lookout for new episodes every Monday at 1 to 3 on 107.7 The Bronx and also on every podcasting platform you can think of.